Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, please email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, before we get started, I want to say today's episode is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners, and I want to specifically thank Michael for his support. We'll send access to the premium site, as we do with all donations of $7 or more. Well, now it's time for today's episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and coming up after that, we continue on with Belladonna Was Poison, but now the conclusion of the Shady Lane matter.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Good morning, Mr. Dollar. I do hope I didn't wake you up.
I was already up, Mrs. Preeny.
Mrs. Preeny, how did you know?
I recognized your voice. What can I do for you?
Well, I know you'll think me terribly forward, but I have to see you, Mr. Dollar, right away.
All right, I'm in room 22. Come on up.
Oh, good heavens, I couldn't possibly do that. After all, you're a man, and I'm...
And you're a woman. Mrs. Preeny, I'm sure you haven't come into town this morning to play footsie. So let's both relax and forget about the fact that...
This is a small town, Mr. Dollar, and you know how people talk here.
Yeah, I know. And what are they talking about this morning?
Well, the murder, I suppose. And, Mr. Dollar, I've got to see you right away. I've done a horrible thing, and I'm ready to confess.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Shady Lane, Vermont, to the Home Office, Star Mutual Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Shady Lane matter. Expense account continued. Item 10, 55 cents, a cup of coffee for myself and a pot of tea for Mrs. Sarah Preeny. She considered the hotel lunchroom an innocent enough place, and I met her there 5 minutes after she phoned my room. It was Mrs. Preeny who'd brought me into the case by writing the anonymous letter to the insurance company. Ellen Bates, a farm wife with no known enemies, had been shot to death. Mrs. Preeny, her best friend, had implied in the letter that Ellen's own husband, Ben, was guilty. And I was inclined to agree with her. Ben was the beneficiary of Ellen's $10,000 life insurance policy. There seemed to be no other motive, unless Mrs. Preeny was about to confess one.
She didn't do it, Mr. Dollar.
Who didn't do what?
That girl. She didn't warm the teapot. For 2 cents, I'd send it back and make her do it right.
Well, I'm a little pressed for time, Mrs. Preeny.
Oh, I'm not going to do it, really. I just said that. I wouldn't want to attract attention under the circumstances.
You mean the fact that I'm a man and you're a woman, and apparently the twain hadn't ought to be meeting, in Shady Lane, at least.
Well, people will talk, you know. And I didn't want Martin to know.
Why not?
Well, then he'd want to know why... Of course, I'd have to tell him, and... Well,
as a matter of fact, Mrs. Preeny, I'd kind of like to know why.
Well, it's... Oh, this isn't easy for me to say, you know.
Well, let's have a try at it anyway.
It's about that letter that I wrote to the insurance company that I didn't sign my name to.
Yes?
It was a terrible thing to do. Just terrible.
In what way?
Why, those things I said about Ben. Mr. Bates, I mean... insinuating he might have had something to do with Ellen's death. Her murder, I mean.
You made some fairly definite statements, Mrs. Preeny.
They weren't true, Mr. Dollar. But I'm telling you the truth now. I know Ben didn't have anything to do with Ellen's death.
Mrs. Preeny, There were some other things you implied to me, too, you know.
Yes, about him and Aunt Millie Wells that works at the Shady Lane Cafe. I said they were carrying on before Ellen was killed. I made that up, just to hit out at him.
Why?
I don't know, really. Ellen was wonderful, and I just loved her. But sometimes I'd get to thinking that... Not that my Martin isn't a fine man, you understand. Steady, reliable. You know, you've met him.
Oh, yes, I'd say your husband is quite steady and reliable.
I didn't want you to think that I was saying anything against him. But life on a farm isn't easy for a woman at the best, Mr. Duller. Sometimes she gets silly notions, I guess.
What sort of notions?
Oh, a woman's human. She wants a little warmth, understanding. That's all. Nothing more. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I think I do.
But Ben Bates, well, he didn't even look at me. Didn't see me. That's all I wanted. Just for him to look at me. But he didn't do it, Mr. Duller. Not even once.
I left her sitting there in the stark, bare wooden booth in the lunchroom, sipping her prim cup of cold tea and trying to hide a red-faced confusion behind the shreds of decent dignity. Constable Bramler was right. Scratch the surface of Shady Lane anywhere, and you found a human passion just beneath the skin. Good morning, Constable.
Morning, Mr. Duller. Sleep well?
So-so. How's Grody Hawkins?
Still asleep, back there in his cell.
He admits stealing that squirrel gun from Ben Bates' mantle the week before Ellen was shot, and claims he sold it to Martin Preeny the week after the murder.
Yeah, so by his own admission, the gun was in Grody's possession the day of the killing.
But Grody claims the gun is rusty and hasn't been fired in years.
Yeah, whether it's rusty or not, Grody didn't kill nobody.
Have you been out to the Preeny farm yet to pick up the gun?
Nope. Figured you might like to do that yourself. You can use my car if you want to. Cost you another $3, though.
How did you make a living before I came along?
It wasn't easy. Traffic tickets, mostly. New turnpike's gonna stop all that, though. Misses the town complete.
Along with Ben Bates' farm, huh?
Yeah. Too bad they didn't stick to the original survey. Made that place of his worth something, maybe.
And it might have saved his wife's life.
Still beating that dead horse, eh?
Oh, Ben Bates was up against the wall. A worthless farm, mortgage for $7,500 to Martin Preeny... A strong sense of moral obligation to pay it off, an invalid wife who would never get well, with a $10,000 policy on her life.
Murder ain't in Ben's nature, I told you.
Then whose nature is it in? Mrs. Preeny's, maybe? She came to see me at the hotel a little while ago.
You don't say so.
She wanted to explain why she'd lied about Ben.
Uh-huh. Reckon 'twas because he wouldn't pay no attention to her.
Who told you?
Figured it out. Reckon Martin ain't too easy a man for a woman to live with. Too straight-laced, tight-fisted. And Ben right next door that-a-way, fine-looking young fella. Her running in all the time, taking things to Ellen. Bound to want to be noticed. Yeah, it's the nature of a woman.
What about Ellen, Mr. Bramler? She was your niece. What was her nature?
Ain't so easy to figure your own kin, Mr. Dollar. Reckon 'twas just her nature to be a victim, kind of.
I drove slowly through the early morning countryside, lush and green, still moist from the night dew, and not yet touched by the heat of day. Farm after farm, snug and smug and safe. But Ellen Bates, a woman who never harmed anyone in her life, had lived on such a farm. Yet a bullet had crashed through the window and found her. I'd left the car parked in the yard and walked on up to the porch. The door opened before I had a chance to...
Oh!
Oh, good morning, Mrs. Preeny.
You surprised me, Mr. Duller.
Is your husband at home?
Yes, he's in there working on his accounts. I was just going to take some strawberry preserves to Mrs. Thrasher up the road. She hasn't been feeling too well.
Sorry to hear it.
You're not going to say anything to Martin about... Well, you know what about...
I wouldn't think of it, Mrs. Preeny.
Thank you. I have to take these preserves to Mrs. Thrasher. You just go right on in, Mr. Duller.
Yes, thanks. Mr. Preeny?
In here. Come on in.
Sorry to bother you this early in the morning.
Oh, Mr. Dollar. Just finishing my accounts for the fiscal year. What can I do for you, sir?
Well, unless I've been misinformed, you bought an old squirrel gun from Grody Hawkins a while back.
That's right. It's hanging there over the fireplace. Quite a bargain, unless he stole it someplace.
As a matter of fact, he did. From your neighbor, Ben Bates.
Then I'm out the price. I'll take it over to Ben this afternoon.
Mind if I take a look at the gun, Mr. Preeny? I'm trying to check up on Grody's story.
No, go right ahead. I'll just finish this tote hole while you're at it. Then we'd have time for a chat.
He went back to the ledges on the table in front of him, and I reached up and took down the rifle down from its hooks above the mantle. Grody had told the truth. There was rust in the barrel and breech. The gun hadn't been cleaned nor fired in a long time. The hooks over the fireplace were old and rusted, too. They'd been there for years. And suddenly I knew.
Find what you were after, Mr. Dollar?
I found more than I was after. I found out who killed Ellen Bates.
Grody Hawkins?
No. No, not Grody. And not Ben Bates. Even though he is named as beneficiary of that $10,000 insurance policy.
What do you mean?
It was somebody who stood to profit even more than Ben did from that $10,000.
Who?
Somebody who made a $7,500 loan out of kindness. That alone should have tipped me off, Mr. Preeny. As Jed Bramler says, it wasn't in your nature.
My nature?
But of course it wasn't kindness. At the time it was good business because a turnpike was planned that would make the farm worth double the loan. But the road fell through and you were stuck with a worthless farm, unless Ben could get money to pay you. I imagine that's when you started thinking about murder.
Are you accusing me of murder, Mr. Dollar?
Those hooks over the mantle have been there a long time. Where's the rifle that hung there before you bought this one from Grody Hawkins?
There might not have been one.
The neighbors will remember.
Let me just put down this final total. Yeah. I had a good year last year. Very good year. I doubt it's going to be that good this year. No regrets, Mr. Dollar. It's like farming. You take risks on drought, frost, insects. Sometimes you make a mistake and lose. I knew I'd made a mistake the second I pulled that trigger. After that, it was just a matter of time. The gun is buried out behind the barn. I'll get my hat.
Item 12, $94.35. Incidentals in Shady Lane and transportation back to Hartford. Expense account total, $186.60. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now, here's our star to tell you about next week's intriguing story.
Next week, a diamond, a huge one, the Star of Cape Town. A piece of ice that should have been kept on ice. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. It is written by Les Crutchfield and produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Jeanette Nolan, Forrest Lewis, Shirley Mitchell, Will Wright, Bert Holland, and John Daner. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino and Carl Fortina. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking. Thank you.
Welcome back. As I said before, this is one of my absolute favorite episodes. I just love the way it turns out. It's a very satisfying payoff. And clearly, even, of course, without noticing the hook on the wall, listeners, we probably should have known who did it just by following the good constable's method. And we're glad to go ahead and play this and salute to Shirley Mitchell. We'll return to our regular order of programming, so we'll go back and listen to The Matter of Reasonable Doubt next week. Now we turn to Carter Brown and part three of Belladonna Was Poisoned.
Carter Brown, Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense, based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
It was a great idea of mine to do an impromptu show devoted to the death of Hannah Vogue for the next TV presentation of There's No Future in Murder. But there'd be no future in TV for me if I didn't reveal the murderer on that show. Because to a million viewers, I wasn't Rockstone the actor. I was Inspector Rockstone, the infallible cop who'd been put on the spot by a real-life cop, Inspector Jakes of Homicide.
What are you doing here, Stoll? I'm a busy man.
Oh, I know that, Inspector. But I thought since you gave that tale to the papers about me solving the murder, you might tell me how things were going.
Yeah, I see nobody could have taken that bit seriously about you having a hot lead.
Why not?
You're still alive.
So's the murderer, unless you've arrested him.
It's only a matter of time.
Did you find out how the corpse got into Lacey's window?
The window was set up the night before. The window dressers left at 9 p.m., so whoever substituted the corpse for the dummy must have done it after that. Two night watchmen claim they heard nothing, but one of the metal blinds closing off the loading dock at the back of the building shows signs of having been forced.
I see. What did you find out about Hannah Vogue?
She was an actress, and she'd been in this town about 6 months. She hadn't had any work since she got here. I don't know how she kept that apartment.
No hot lead, huh?
No. Why, do you know something?
Me, Inspector? I'm just a TV cop. How could I know anything? Hey, and speaking of TV, how about being in the studio for our next show?
Me? Why?
Well, we're doing the murder on the next program, and we'd like you to be there.
Hey, what's behind this? What are you up to, Stone?
Oh, nothing, Inspector. Just trying to carry out the promise you made to the newspapers in my name.
Stone, if you know anything, it's your duty to inform the police.
Oh, I shall, Inspector. But I don't want to make you look a liar to the general public.
What?
Well, you told the press boys that I would solve the murder, and that's what I'm trying to do. So long, Inspector. See you in the studio.
I think it's the most ridiculous idea I ever heard. I wouldn't allow it for one moment to commercialize murder. It's unethical.
But, Mr. Lacey...
It's a crazy, preposterous idea. I won't hear another word about it, Stone.
I'm sorry you feel that way, Mr. Lacey. That means I'll have to scrap the idea of you introducing the show.
What? Well, me? Introduce it?
Well, that's what I had in mind. I naturally figured that you as our sponsor would open the program.
Well, you wanted me to appear on the show?
Sure, with a statement to our audience about how you stood four square for justice and how this program would bring a murderer to justice.
Oh, no, wait a minute. I hadn't thought of it quite like that before. That puts a different complexion on the matter.
Oh, does it, Mr. Lacey?
Of course. Now, this whole thing will have to be properly organized. We can't afford any slip-ups.
That's right, sir.
All right, get on to it, Stone.
Of course, Mr. Lacey. Just one other thing.
Yeah?
We'd like your manager, Mr. Sheep, to come along, too.
All right, I'll send him a memo about it.
Why, thank you. You know, there's one thing that's had me wondering about Mr. Sheep.
What's that?
If he can't sleep at night, what does he count? People? When I left Lacey's department store, I thought I ought to have a few words with Sam Long about the form the presentation ought to take. He wasn't to be seen at Harry's bar, so I headed for his apartment. I'd never been there before. Man, it was a shabby-looking building. I was surprised Sam was making money. He could afford something better than that. There was no answer when I pressed the buzzer, but a door opposite opened, and a woman stuck her head out.
You looking for Mr. Long?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, he isn't in.
Yeah, that probably explains why he doesn't open the door.
Say, aren't you Inspector Rockstone?
That's right.
Gee, I always watch your program. That is, when my old man isn't working early shift. He gets home around 4 in the afternoon then, and we watch another channel.
Why?
He can't stand the sight of you. He says if you're a cop, he's a ballet dancer.
And he's not, I take it.
He works on the garbage collection.
Have you any idea where Mr. Long would be?
Try Harry's bar.
I have.
He's there most times. Drinks too much. He's changed since he first come here. He was different then.
Younger, perhaps.
Happier, too. They both were happy.
Did you say they?
Sure. Him and his wife.
Wife? Yeah, I never knew he was married.
Oh, lovely little thing she was. An actress. But then they started in quarreling. Quarreled something terrible before she left him. Guess that's why he drinks so much.
You say she was an actress?
Used to go mad at him, yelling it was his fault she couldn't get a job because he wouldn't help her.
You don't know the name that she used professionally?
No, never heard of it. But pretty as a picture she was, with her red hair and everything.
Red hair?
Flaming red. Lovely hair. Way mine used to be before it started falling out.
I can imagine.
Every time I saw her, I used to say to myself, Holy Hannah, if only my hair... Hey, that was her name, Hannah.
I left the talkative dame with my head reeling. Not only from her gabbling, but from the unexpected, astonishing information I'd stumbled on. Sam Long, married. And to a beautiful redhead actress named Hannah. And it was a beautiful redhead actress named Hannah who'd been found dead in Lacey's window. It looked as though Sam and I should have a long, confidential chat. But I ran into a complication. With curves. A special set of curves called Lower Shore.
Oh, there you are, Mr. Stone.
Where else should I be, Miss Shaw? This is the door to my apartment. I was about to open it and walk in.
Not yet. We've got to go somewhere else first.
The implication is that we can come back here afterwards?
Why, Mr. Stone, we hardly know each other.
A couple of hours of some low lights and lingering music could fix that.
I'll think about it. But now we'd better be on our way.
Where are we going?
You'll see when we get there.
Hey, why all the mystery?
Because it's important to me that whoever murdered Hannah Vogue is found. And it's important to you, too, isn't it?
Well, sure. But the trouble is that all I've got so far is a lot of questions with no answers.
Come with me and I guarantee you one of the answers. Maybe the most significant one.
Lois had a car and slid in behind the wheel. After a half-hour drive, we stopped outside a sprawling two-story house with grounds big enough to build an aircraft plant in.
You know who lives here?
Nobody in my income bracket.
The name is Tony Seguera.
Should I know him?
Tony Seguera is one of the three top syndicate men in the city.
Then I shouldn't know him.
I think you should. Let's go meet him.
She led the way up to the front door, where a butler carefully patted me in case I was carrying a gun, then led us into a large, luxuriously furnished room, and then discreetly retired. From a spidery-looking and expensive chair rose a spidery-looking, expensive character.
This is Rock Stone, Mr. Seguera.
Glad to know you, Stone. Pick up your show regular.
I'm pleased to hear it, Mr. Seguera. Say, do you like it?
Sure. I'm glad the regular cops aren't as smart as you. I'd be out of business.
But you are, aren't you, Tony?
Oh, sure. Legitimate business I'm in now. Trucking.
Tony's a sort of elder statesman for the syndicate in this area.
Yeah, you could call me that.
He's got some interesting information for you.
Glad to hear anything that might help me.
Now, this will, but you got to understand a few things first.
Huh?
Now, this dame getting herself knocked off in a store window, that's bad for the syndicate. Gets too much publicity. People start talking, say what's doing in their city. Next thing you know, there's a reform party starts up, and we got to buy to keep things as they are. It costs too much dough.
Yeah, I can see that.
So, we got no interest in this thing. Don't concern us. Until it gets publicity, and then it does.
I see.
Now,
You're going to do a real-life show next Tuesday.
That's right.
You find the guy who did it on your show, and everybody gets happy, says, what a fine city we got, huh? Makes sense?
From your side of the fence, yeah.
So we're in your corner on this one.
Yeah, that's fine.
Now, here's the facts. This Vogue dame is Aldous Lacey's dame, right?
Right.
She gets herself murdered. Why? Maybe because she found out something that Lacey don't want anybody else to know.
Could be.
Something like he's been spending more dough than he should have over the last couple of years, maybe. And he wants a quick investment with a large profit to get it back. So he puts $100,000 into the rackets when the syndicate can use the dough and he collects 20% over 12 months.
With due respect to Tony, you could say this was right from the horse's mouth.
Now, the syndicate did the right thing by Lacey. We paid him his 20% a month ago and gave him back his 100 grand. We're clean. But we don't want to get mixed up in this thing. The way we see it, the dame found out about it some way. Maybe she blackmailed Lacey, or maybe she threatened to talk to the cops. But that's why she was killed. We're sure of that.
Thanks, Mr. Seguera. Thanks a lot.
Oh, any time. Now, I just done you a favor. How about you do me one?
Well, what is it?
Well, you mention this in your show, that's okay with us. But just change it around a little. Not very much. Don't say he invested the dough in the rackets. Just say he invested in the syndicate through me. I'm okay. I'm clean. I've paid taxes on the dough I made on his dough. And make the point that Lacey got his dough back. We don't want people we do business with to doubt our honesty.
Sure, Mr. Seguera, I'll do that.
Fine, I look forward to seeing your show. I'm a real fan for your show. It's my second favorite TV show.
Which is first?
Hopalong Cassidy. He's a real nice guy. And so's his horse. And he keeps the kids on the straight and narrow. Lets them know that crime don't pay.
You approve of that?
Sure. You think we want the rackets to get overcrowded?
I just don't get it. How come you found all this out, Lois? And you knew about Kathy Mulden. Hey, where do you belong in this setup?
I'm just a girl who knows a guy. The guy being Tony Seguera. But right now I'm with another guy, and the lights are low, the music's lingering, and I'm feeling languid. Didn't you say something about getting to know me better?
Oh, sorry, honey. This isn't my night for concentrating on anything except murder, that is.
You've just got a one-track mind.
You know, I thought it was a pretty brilliant idea. This live TV show to unmask a killer. With me on the spot the whole time.
Well,
it just occurred to me. If anything goes wrong, and I'm in front of the cameras every minute...
Yes?
I'll make an awfully easy target, won't I?
Welcome back. Well, good old reliable Carter Brown Mysteries cynicism regarding Hopalong Cassidy. I actually double checked. I was curious if people in Australia in the 1950s would have been aware of Hopalong Cassidy. And apparently they were. I found that the actor who played Hopalong Cassidy came to Australia and was welcomed by tens of thousands of people, according to Radio New Zealand. But that will do it for this week. We will be back tomorrow with the lineup, and then join us back here on Monday for another Johnny Dollar series, and on Friday, the conclusion of Belladonna Was Poisoned. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.